Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for November 20th, 2009.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
This week, we'll tell you just how unique your own body's bacteria are. We'll investigate a marine worm that could help fix broken bones, and we'll answer a question we know has plagued many of you. If you swallow chewing gum, does it really take years to go through your system? First, though, Suzanne Bard took a journey back in time.
Go outside in the springtime, and you can't help but notice flowering plants everywhere. But before these plants evolved the ability to make flowers to reproduce, non-flowering plants, also called gymnosperms, dominated the landscape.
Gymnospermous plants go all the way back to the Paleozoic, even to the latest Devonian, at about 350 or 60 million years.
That's Conrad LaBandera, a paleoecologist at the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History. He says gymnosperms you'd recognize today include coniferous trees like firs, the ginkgo tree, and a funny group of plants called cycads. He says scientists used to think that ancient gymnosperms were pollinated only by the wind, and that insect pollination didn't arise until all those flowering plants came along a little over 100 million years ago. But he and his team recently analyzed fossil evidence from China that indicates that ancient scorpionfly insects may have been pollinating some non-flowering plants as many as 60 million years before that. LaBandera says that the scorpionflies had long, tube-like mouthparts resembling the proboscis on a modern butterfly.
And we also noted that in the same deposits were characteristic structures of non-flowering plants, that is, cone-like structures or other reproductive structures that had very elongate tubules or funnels that would be ideal for receiving the pollen that was attached to these elongate mouthparts of the scorpionflies.
Putting two and two together, he and his team have concluded that the scorpionflies were very likely pollinating these non-flowering plants. What's interesting is that today, millions of years later, scorpionflies no longer have proboscis-like mouthparts, so the relationship between them and these ancient non-flowering plants must have ended at some point in evolutionary history. He says the discovery provides the first strong evidence that ancient non-flowering plants weren't just pollinated by the wind.
And it may very well turn out that these relationships are much more ancient than we thought, and that what dinosaurs saw with flowering plants were just the latest episode in terms of this dynamic process between pollinating insects and their pollinated plants.
His team is now investigating other ancient insects that may have been pollinating non-flowering plants as well.
Thanks, Suzanne. We all have trillions of benign microbes living on or in us, but scientists are just starting to realize how different these personal microbe communities are. The latest comes from University of Colorado at Boulder microbial ecologist Rob Knight and his colleagues. They analyzed the microbial populations of 18 anatomical sites on 9 different people. It was already known that different sites on the same person harbor different microbes.
So what was really surprising is that when you control for all of those differences, essentially every site on the body is highly variable between different people.
About 80 to 90% variable, in fact. They even found that one person's skin bacteria wouldn't grow on another person. Knight says our unique microbial profile may be an overlooked influence on our health. Next, Justin Warner has news about the medical applications of a marine animal.
An industrious little sea creature called the sandcastle worm builds reef-like homes out of sand and grit. To do that, it makes its own super-strong, water-resistant glue. Now, University of Utah bioengineer Russell Stewart and his colleagues are making a synthetic version of the sandcastle worm's glue. The goal is to create a medical adhesive that can fix shattered bone.
The sandcastle worm literally glues skeletons together under the water, if you consider seashells an exoskeleton. And that's pretty much the challenge that a surgeon would have if he wanted to use glue to repair bone.
Stewart says the glue could be more precise and less invasive than conventional screws and pins, especially if it can be injected into tiny crevices. Ideally, the glue would also degrade as the bone heals, unlike metal hardware, which often requires a second surgery to remove it. So far, his team's synthetic glue passes the strength test. In fact, it's twice as strong as the real thing, enough to hang a 40-pound weight from 1 square centimeter's worth of adhesive. The bigger hurdle is to make sure it's compatible with the human body.
We also have a ways to go to show that it does degrade over time, and we need to adjust the degradation rate so it matches natural healing. So those are very big challenges that are still ahead of us.
The glue did pass the first round of toxicity tests in the lab. If its success continues, it'll become one of countless useful technologies inspired by Mother Nature.
Thanks, Justin. Finally today, Suzanne has a sticky story of another sort.
It's time for another episode of our new series, Reality Check, where we investigate paranormal claims, weird phenomena, and science folklore. Michelle Sims of Alexandria, Virginia, says her parents warned her to never swallow her chewing gum because they told her it wouldn't be digested for 7 years. Well, she's skeptical, so we asked Dr. Aaron Carroll, a health services researcher at the Indiana University School of Medicine, if this is really true. He says chewing gum is never digested, but
there's no truth to the idea that gum stays in your stomach for 7 years if you swallow it. The body is incredibly good at getting things from one end to the other, even things that aren't digestible. And we eat lots of things that aren't digestible. Cellulose and vegetables isn't really digestible. Some seeds aren't. Even if you were to swallow a coin, all of those things pass through your stomach from one end to the other. Gum's not going to stick either. It doesn't stick in your mouth or to your teeth or tongue, and it doesn't stick to your intestines. A normal-sized piece of gum swallowed by a normal person will pass through just like food. It's absolutely not going to be in there for 7 years.
He says chewing gum will normally pass through the system in as long as it takes food to do so, about 24 hours. But he warns that children should be discouraged from swallowing large pieces of gum because they could cause an emergency blockage. And if your favorite science myth needs a reality check, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use it, you'll win a Science Update mug.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, we'll have a whole new set of fascinating science stories for you. Until then, keep current in the world of science and discovery by listening to the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.